stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Kevin Cook, Zach's senior strategist and editor of the Healthcare Innovators portfolio. And that's a portfolio here at Zach's, which tracks about 30 healthcare companies, of course, those that are hopefully innovating. And we're here to talk about that area of the market today, healthcare, and where the deals might be in healthcare stocks, if there are any. I don't know, because this has been a real hot sector. Kevin, like I, you know, kind of wrote off the biotechs and all that stuff a year ago. They were hot forever and then they crashed down. And then this year, the biotechs have really stormed back. I looked at a couple of the ETFs, that S&P Biotech ETF, ticker XBI, that's the equal weight. Mm-hmm. That one is up 47% year to date. And then the always popular NASDAQ Biotech ETF, the iShares IBB, that's up 27%. Can't fault either one of those returns right now. But when I look at those numbers, then I'm automatically thinking as a value investor, I'm probably not going to find that much value now in the biotech area. But maybe there is some if you look at individual holdings. But why don't you explain, because we were kind of talking about this before we started recording this podcast, about why it's hard if you're looking for value in the biotechs in particular.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so you mentioned that the equal weight biotech index, the XBI, was up like over
47%. Yeah.
And that speaks to the power of the small cap and the mid cap biotech. You know, and you're talking about, you can call this emerging biotechnology. Just like there's emerging markets, there's emerging biotech. They have no profits. They may not even have a product on the market yet. They're still, you know, in phase one, phase two, phase three trials, and these stocks are getting bid up. Now, to back up a second, I never lost faith in biotech, even though we had this big crash, you know, in a bear market, 40% down. You know, obviously, it got to bubble conditions in 2015, and so it was due for this major slam down. And that's what gets everybody to hate it, right?
Right.
You know, any technical investor looks at the chart and goes, no, that's a bear market. You stay away. And I'm like, no, you can't, because I look at the fundamental drivers and the long-term drivers, right? We have an aging population. We have people living longer because of medicine. But then if people are living into their 90s, and you and I have talked about this before because you have a grandma in her 90s, you know, they need more care, right?
Yes.
Of all kinds, whether it's medicine or facilities or devices. And then the science power, you know, is another mega trend I talk about, that ever since we cracked the code of the genome, there's all these startups just trying to do something with that information. So my Zach's Healthcare Innovators portfolio, we plan to start that in... We talked about it in December and January, but we knew we weren't going to start it till April. Well, I was already chomping at the bit. I'm like, how soon can we start this? Because because I thought everything was cheap. You know, that's really, things at the beginning of the year were super cheap in my view, and I just couldn't wait. And we opened it in April, and I just started buying like crazy, and I got a lot of stuff at what I thought were good values. And so now when you ask me about value, I just have to remind people that this portfolio that I run has a long-term view. I'm looking at everything I buy, I picture holding it 2 to 5 years. And so I'm willing to withstand the volatility of a 20% drawdown because, you know, if I think it's got more upside than downside, you know, if I think it's got 50% upside, I'll take the risk of 20% downside. So, and then you just have to do a lot of homework. I mean, in the Zach's healthcare sector, or we call it the medical sector, there's over 800 companies. So,
yeah, this was another point I wanted to make, is I was asked this question, oh, can you get me some value healthcare stocks? And, you know, just looking at it, that sector is huge, as mm-hmm. you just said. And there's so many individual industries within it, some which have very different outlooks and valuations than others.
Right.
So you can't really lump them all into one huge thing. And the Healthcare Innovators portfolio, that's not just biotechs.
No, you're
in everything too.
Yeah. And I try to diversify based on those trends. So we talk about the mega trend of an aging population needing care longer. And then science innovation isn't just in biotech, it's also in devices. I own a company called Edwards Life Sciences, which pioneered the non-surgical heart valve replacement. They got this valve they can insert through a catheter in your leg and go up and install a new heart valve. It's just amazing. So I own many device companies.
Yeah, I think that's kind of key because a lot of people think that the glamour stocks are all the biotechs. Yeah. And that is fun to talk about the immunotherapies mm-hmm. and the gene stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are these other just, you know, very practical applications that, you know, are hot and that are growing. And that area is a good area to look in.
Yeah. And one more thing about biotech is that I also tried to spread my risk out by trying to do homework. Okay, so there's let's say there's 300 biotech companies I could choose from. Well, I mean, I'm not a microbiologist, and I can't go visit these companies. So I rely a lot on analyst research and the company websites to tell me, you know, is this some research that has a shot? So then that's where I'll say, well, it seems like this small cap or this mid cap does have a shot. But then what's more reliable are the large caps, you know, so like a Gilead.
Yeah, let's talk about Gilead, because I looked at them and I was thinking along this line too, that if I want value and I want to stay in the biotech area in individual companies, mm-hmm. that something like Gilead is where I need to be because they are cheap. They have a forward P of just 9, but they've been cheap for a couple of years. Right. And I've thought of them and I've called them a value trap over the years,
yes,
because they still have that falling earnings.
Right.
They made $11.57 last year, only going to make $8.74 this year. We all know that where they're getting the revenue is a struggle for them. Mm-hmm. But is something like this where I should be taking a chance now?
Well, I mean, I did in the mid-60s. When Gilead made these new multi-year lows, I felt lucky that we could still buy it in the mid-60s, and you know, and that's worked. And obviously, one of the reasons it spiked up is because it went out and paid $12 billion for one of these immunotherapy companies, Kite Pharma, symbol K-I-T-E. I mean, Gilead is almost like a perfect microcosm of trying to understand investing in biotech, because as you said, you know, the prices went down for 3 years straight because the earnings were going down, right? Their big franchise was hepatitis C. You know, 5-6 years ago, they bought a company called Pharmacet for about $11 billion. $11, $12 billion seems to be their price tag for things.
Yeah.
And that's where they acquired the rights to this hepatitis C treatment that, you know, was just a breakthrough cure, right? And it could actually cure people's hepatitis. And the price tag was a little pricey, you know, at anywhere from $100,000 to $85,000 for say a 12-week treatment, but it cured it. And insurers were willing to pay for that because it was cheaper than installing a new liver in somebody.
Right.
So now what did Gilead do? Their HCV franchise is a little bit threatened from competition. You've got other big pharma that can come up with a medicine, and prices are getting compressed. So Gilead's like, okay, we got a war chest of cash. We got to go out and buy some new science.
Yeah.
And they go for the immunotherapy, which, by the way, if you're not familiar with it, researchers have been working for the past 15 years or so on cracking the code to teach your body's immune system to fight cancer. Because the nefarious thing about cancer is that it tricks your body. Cancer can hide from your immune system. So we have to teach your immune system to recognize the proteins to be able to communicate and go, ah, that's a cancer cell, and teach your white blood cells, your T cells to attack.
What about some of these other kind of big caps like Biogen? That ticker is BIIB. They're trading at 15 times.
Yeah, we both ran a value screening.
Yeah.
We came up with these names like Biogen and Amgen,
yeah,
and Gilead.
Amgen is, yeah, also, they have a P of 14.6. They're up 24% year to date now, Amgen, but they pay a dividend of 2.5%. Gilead also pays a dividend, 2.6, but Biogen has no dividend. Yeah. What about those guys?
So I'll tell you, when I own less than 30 companies in this portfolio, and in the big four, you talk about the four horsemen of biotech are Gilead, Celgene, Amgen, and Biogen. Those are the big four players that are considered pure biotech, as opposed to a Johnson & Johnson or a Merck or a Pfizer or a Lilly. So I could have bought all of them. And,
okay.
And I could make the argument to any long-term healthcare investor, if you have the capital and you're really want to concentrate, maybe you should own all four, because it's almost, I was going to compare it to Ford and GM, but I don't want to do that. How about, it's almost like owning Amazon, Google,
yeah, the
Facebook. Yeah, I mean.
All the social media.
Well, no, I'm talking like dominant tech.
Okay.
So when I say Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Microsoft, I'm talking about dominant tech innovators.
Okay.
That will, and that's, so there is an argument to own all four. I bought Gilead and Celgene because I thought they had more value. We've done well in them. If I was a real hedge fund managing money and I went to having 50 holdings, I'd buy Amgen and Biogen right away because I think that they have, you know, excellent management, excellent scientists, and they're going to continue to innovate. They're going to be doing something 20 years from now that you have no idea about, and it's going to be revolutionizing medicine and society. So if you don't own them and you like the value there, you know, yeah.
Okay. And they also, as you mentioned, have the cash, the cash flows and that capability to go out like Gilead did and buy someone
exactly.
else if they don't have
which it. Which is fundamental to biotech investing. That I talk about the relationship between small caps and the mega caps. I call the mega caps the big brothers because they come in and partner. I own a company called Bluebird, which is a lot like Kite Pharma in immunotherapy. And that's one of my best performers right now because after Gilead bought Kite, everybody thinks, oh, who's going to buy Bluebird? And I don't know if anybody will because Celgene is already their partner. Celgene's their big brother in the research that they're doing on immunotherapy. So, but that's what Big Pharma does is they partner, get the science validated, and then they decide, you know, where do we go from here? You know, so it's a long term, and that's what you need in science, right? Because it's that heavy R&D takes heavy dollars.
That's right. Now, what about on the generic drug side? These used to be really hot a couple of years ago. I want to say like 5 or 6 years ago at least. Like you didn't want to be in the other types of drug companies. You only wanted to be in the generic
right.
side. And now it is just not good. It's been like years now since it's been struggling. But I did look at some of them. I mean, Teva, for instance, which is ticker TEVA. This was the big name that you wanted to be in, and it has a forward P of 3.4. I mean, that's basically you're like saying it's going to go out of business, but it's not. But those earnings estimates are on the decline. Like they made $5.14 last year, supposed to make $4.24 this year, $3.82 next year. Like that, as an investor, that to me says value trap. Like it's going the wrong way.
I've never done well with the generics. And what's so ironic here is, again, this links back to the biotechs or just biopharma in general, because if you've got a Pfizer or a Novartis or somebody who's got a drug that's coming off of patent, we talk about the patent cliff where all of a sudden they can't charge, you know, X amount of dollars because they've lost the patent and the revenue drops. So we call it the patent cliff. And you think, well, the generic company is the one that benefits from that. But that must be just such a hard business because that, I mean, Teva is down for the year, right?
Yeah.
And you talk about how cheap it is. There's your classic value trap, which you're an expert on.
Yeah. And what about Valeant? We've talked about them numerous times on this podcast, especially when the really crazy stuff was happening in that stock and when some of the big money managers were buying shares and all of that. But they still have falling earnings too for this year and next year. They are still making money, but... You know, is that one to poke around in or is it the same kind of story?
Like, I mean, the problem is because they were this roll-up machine, right? They would buy other companies that it's such a complex business. It's, you know, they have all these different businesses that they bought and it's hard to keep track of all those revenue streams and which ones are going to, you know, maybe get taken out by a generic. So it's almost too complicated for me to look at. And I don't see any analyst saying, hey,
no.
You know, it's a screaming buy here. So
no, but if you're interested, the ticker, of course, is VRX on that one. But let's talk about one of the companies that I feel like is a good story, and they're fairly cheap right now, AbbVie.
Yeah.
This was spun off almost 5 years ago now from Abbott Labs. Mm-hmm. The ticker is ABBV. They're trading it around 16 times, and they're expected to grow earnings 14% this year, 19% next year. What are they doing right?
Well, they've had some good news in the past month or so here. First thing was they resolved some litigation with Amgen over Humira. So that like opened up it reduced the uncertainty and guaranteed, you know, a certain stream of revenues. And then the stock really started to move. We were lucky to have gotten in. I thought it was a solid company. Like I looked at a lot of things. Like I say, I can't own everything, right? I don't own Pfizer. I don't own Merck. Not because I'm prejudiced against them, just because I didn't see that they were going to move as much for me. But I saw AbbVie as sort of a unique value opportunity at the time in the 60s. And I'm thinking about buying more here at 90 because analysts are all raising their price targets to 105, 110, 115 because they really like the growth story here.
Yeah, it looks like one of the better ones as far as earnings growth and all of that and sales growth.
And again, that's not a pure biotech. That's more along the lines of your big biopharma like a Merck or a Pfizer.
Right. What about some of these areas that are being affected by Obamacare? Because some of those are showing up, I know, as the cheap stocks too in this area. And I'm thinking of like the hospitals. Like I took a look at Tenet, THC, and they are fairly cheap, PE of 15, but earnings expected to decline 18% this year. And that's before anything gets passed in DC or repealed or anything really is going on other than those CSRs possibly going away. So is this too uncertain here with everything still up in the air on Obamacare?
I think it is. And I have a couple of stories there. So when I started this portfolio in April, I wanted to focus long-term and on the mega trends that I talked about in science and aging and that kind of thing. And I said, you know what? ACA to be damned. You know, I'm damn the torpedoes. I'm not going to look at anything going on in Washington because it's such a roll of the dice. It's so emotional. It's so volatile. I have to look out past any repeal and replace, or we got the big surprise last week of an executive order.
Right.
You and I were talking about that before.
Yeah.
Do we think that the HMOs are safe? Oh yeah, they're not going to get anything done. And then all of a sudden we got an executive order.
Exactly.
So I'm glad that I just committed to looking past it and not worrying about it every week. But I did buy one hospital that I thought was cheap and had a chance. It was so beaten down, and that was Tenet, THC.
Okay.
And we were up like 30% in at one point, and then it totally reversed. And now it's back down to 52-week lows, and it's like, no, I don't want to touch a hospital. I'm lucky we do own one managed care company, Centene, CNC, which is somehow even surviving the recent executive order.
It is.
From the administration. And I'm just thrilled about that because it's been a big winner for us. And it's, you know, and this is managed care for elderly and so forth. And so those Medicaid and Medicare payments are deemed that's still a reliable stream for them. It's not being threatened right now.
Well, yeah. Isn't the thing that everybody got wrong initially when this news came out about the executive order was, oh no, I don't want to be in these ones that have exposure to the exchanges and all of that. But they have a way to get the same revenue because they can raise prices to just cover what they're not going to get under the subsidy.
For necessary care.
Yeah, so the managed care companies might not get hit quite as hard as what everybody initially thought. Unlike the hospitals where you just might not have a patient at all and they might have to cover more in the emergency rooms again. So they get the double whammy, but managed care might not. And Centene, as you mentioned, from what I've seen, has some of the biggest exposure to the exchanges. A lot of the other ones have decided to get out. Like we heard from United Healthcare just today as we're recording this, they reported earnings. That's UNH is the ticker there. And they got out of the exchanges completely 3 quarters ago.
Wow.
So they don't even have any exposure. They are taking some costs charges for getting out still, but otherwise they're completely free and clear.
That seems like some good forecasting on their part too, to, you know, like if it's going to remain the law, you would have to remain in them, but they just kind of saw this is going by the wayside.
Yeah, a couple of them decided it was just too risky for them to be in it, including Aetna, which is really, really reduced. I own Aetna in the value investor portfolio, and I think it's our oldest holding. We've had it a couple of years in there now, and people got a little nervous again about that stock as well. But they have very little exposure. I think it's only about 180,000 patients now, and they've been slowly declining out of there too. So I do think if you're looking at the HMOs and the managed care side, you know, take a look at who does have the exposures and who doesn't, because UNH, I mean, they crushed it this quarter. Their revenue was up almost 10%. Uh-huh. So you have to like, I still like what's going on in the managed care side, even with the uncertainty. But yeah, you should be looking around in that area. They're not that expensive, actually.
Yeah.
UNH, I think, because of its premium kind of everybody considers it to be kind of the top of the heap there. That is the most expensive. I think it's trading around 19 times.
Did either of them come up on your screen?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, HCA did, right? The hospital
there's
corporation.
A few, yes. And Aetna didn't either, but they're trading at 15 times, a little over 15
Pretty
times.
Solid business. They're going to figure out the right side to be on.
Right. All these insurers will.
I know your theme is value, but I could almost go, okay, but let's talk about growth. Because, you know, in that, I talked about value places I looked, but I also look a lot at growth. And one place I didn't mention, I talked about devices and instruments, is dental. I own one dental company, which has done extremely well, and that's Align Technology. They make the Invisalign clear dental straighteners. And
what's that ticker?
ALGN.
Okay.
And that's all about growth. And it's, I mean, you've got... You know, they set a record last quarter of the or a milestone. They finally 1 million teenagers are wearing those clear braces, and I'm sure teenagers prefer them, right?
Oh yeah.
And if you get more people asking for it, and more you know dentists and orthodontists familiar with it and recommending it, you know that grows the U.S. business. But the real growth lever is international.
Yeah, I was wondering if they had international exposure.
Yeah, that's why the stock has run so hard here, and it's one of my big winners. It's because they're going into China and India, and you know what a cultural revolution that is for people who may never have gotten a chance to have traditional braces, if they can have this type of treatment. Yeah.
Do you cover or look at anything in the eye category? Is that like a separate thing, or is that too hard to do on its own?
You know, I've looked at a couple of companies, but I haven't been able to pull the trigger on anything.
Okay.
And really though, you have some biotechs who have treatments. You know, so say for macular degeneration, Regeneron is one of my biotechs that they have a drug called Eylea, which is they built their business on basically. Before they came up with the dermatitis drug too. So, you know, nothing involving like LASIK or anything like that.
Okay. Okay. What else is cheap? Anything else that we should know on the cheap side?
Do you have your screen in front of you? I don't. Somehow didn't bring mine, but I think we talked about...
What about on the devices? There's no cheap devices? I can't remember what was on there.
Yeah, I don't think...
Devices have kind of run off.
I'll just tell you the way I did my screen. I just went on Zacks Premium, and I just selected the healthcare sector, and then I wanted to see two forward criteria. I wanted to see the fiscal year that we're... You know, coming
current,
into.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that under 20, a PE of 20 or better. And then I wanted to see the next fiscal year at 15 or better, which implies I want to see that earnings growth, you know, now. And I came up with 63 names.
Yeah. When I ran it today, it was 61.
Yeah. And so. I don't remember seeing any devices.
I don't remember any like real common names. There were a couple that like Owen and Miner. That's not devices, but that's like medical supplies.
Okay.
I want to say. Like, so if you need gauzes and things like that, I think that's what they do.
And that was in the mid-teens?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was fairly
like
cheap.
I own a company called Inogen, which makes the portable oxygen concentrators, which is a really a great breakthrough for anybody who needs constant oxygen. Because instead of carrying a big tank around, it's this small box that can concentrate oxygen and it's super reliable. That is not a value.
No.
And that again is gross because nobody's doing what they're doing. And so it's got a very high PE, but I just see the growth there and I see the potential that they could get bought.
Right. There's a lot of medical stocks that I like, but they're not values, I'm afraid to say. Right. So I'm sticking away from some of those right now on this podcast. I like the growth, but no. Well, we covered quite a few names here, and I'm just going to recap for everybody who's listening.
Oh, Jazz Pharma was on my screen.
Oh, yeah.
I own Jazz Pharma. So
that was pretty cheap, 12 times. Mm-hmm. And that they do have rising earnings estimates as well.
Yeah, real profits from a biotech.
Yes. So let's go over some of the tickers in case you're interested in any of these. Of course, there's Gilead, G-I-L-D, Amgen, A-M-G-N, Biogen, B-I-I-B, Teva's, T-E-V-A. The hospital's tenant is THC. We talked a little bit about United Healthcare, UNH. Aetna is AET. AbbVie is ABBV. Valiant, if you're really rolling the dice there, VRX. Bluebird is Blue, B-L-U-E. And then Jazz Pharma is Jazz, J-A-Z-Z. And if you're interested in just going for the straight biotech ETFs, which is an easy way to get all the biotechs, there's the bigger biotech ETF, XBI, that's the equal weight, and then the NASDAQ Biotechnology iShares, IBB. And if you're also interested in a lot of these stocks that Kevin is doing the research on, you can always do a trial for the Zacks Ultimate to get access to the healthcare innovators. Because, you know, I don't know what's going on in the sector. That's why I had Kevin on here. I didn't put this on my Value Investor podcast because I have no idea, right, like all the differences and what a lot of these companies are doing. So if you're like me and you're kind of scared of the healthcare, other than maybe like the HMOs or something like that, but if you like healthcare but you're confused about everything that goes on in that sector, then Healthcare Innovators might be the portfolio and newsletter for you. So be sure to check that out on the Zacks Ultimate Trial, which you can do on Zacks.com. And as always, be sure to subscribe to get all of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, which is iTunes. And you can get all of the Value Investor podcasts on there, as well as the Zacks Market Edge. And then yours is on there too, Kevin. Mind Over Money podcast. Be sure to check that out too, because that's kind of an interesting look into the psychology of money, I want to say.
Yeah, the psychology of investing. And today we're doing a deep dive on artificial intelligence.
Some
of my favorite companies there and how it's going to change so many industries.
Okay, so that sounds interesting too. So be sure to subscribe to all of our podcasts over on iTunes. And from everyone here, I'll see you again next time.